Welcome to Qatar Kick Around, the nightly wrap-up and discussion of the day's action in the 2022 World Cup. From the group stage to the final, our team is here, keeping you on top of the world's most watched sporting event. Brought to you by Westwood One Sports.
Howdy-ho, and welcome to Match Day 2 of Qatar Kick Around, our daily wrap-up, recap, show, thingamajig.
About did you say Match Day 2?
Match Day 12. Did I say 2?
You did say 2. And I was like very worried.
It's been a long tournament. Peter's brain is...
Stop. Hold on. We'll restart.
Are we? All right. Come on. That's sort of goof is charming.
No. Oh, okay. You win,
it humanizes
Lars.
You, Peter.
That saves me the edit. Yes, it's Match Day 12.
Yeah, you're not some unstoppable radio talking machine that never makes mistakes.
Just thinks he is, that's all.
It's like you say about the referees, why you don't like the VAR. Like, the mistakes are part of the game.
That's true. Thank you for that perspective, Lars. Exactly. That's why you're my friend.
There we go.
See, you're good for more than just football chatter.
Mm.
You're a good, warm, cuddly friend.
To prop you up when you need propping.
Yes. Lars, it's great to have you on as... well, you know, because you're a very popular football podcast person.
And Don't start.
Okay. No, we love having you.
You're making fun of me for having a busy schedule. Listen, I'm a freelancer, man. If you don't have a busy schedule, then you're out in the street. You gotta hustle.
Right. You gotta pay the electric bill, right?
Exactly. You're right. Wow. Yeah. Really do.
For sure. Okay. So it is Match Day 12, well, one and a two, 12 of today, and it was last third round games for G and H, my friend Andrew.
Yes.
And we're going to start first. Good Lord, what am I doing?
Hello, everybody.
You haven't even introduced Andy.
Oh, yeah. See, this is why I wanted to restart, Lars. You completely blew my fuse.
The tournament's getting to you.
The dude that knows more about the World Cup than anybody, Andy Swift.
Hello, Peter. Let me just, right off the bat, let's just go to the trivia.
Wait, I didn't introduce Lars.
You just
We spent a lot of time establishing
you
who I am.
You just had it backwards today. That's okay.
Are you upset that you didn't get to go first?
No, not at all.
Are you feeling shoved out of the way by the famous podcasting slut, Lars Sivertsen?
Not one bit. All right, let's get to the question because we have a lot to talk about today since a certain national team plays tomorrow.
Professor Andy's World Cup trivia.
All right, with Mexico having failed to advance out of the group stage this World Cup for their first time in eight tries, their streak of advancement to the round of 16 ended at 7 straight World Cups. Which of the countries playing in this current World Cup has reached the round of 16 in every tournament they have qualified for? In other words, in every World Cup they have played in, they have reached at least the round of 16. They've always advanced out of the group stage.
So this could be a nation that's only been in the World Cup like once or twice.
In fact, they have reached the quarterfinals 6 of the last 8 times they have played in the round of 16.
Wait, is this just one country or a list of countries?
One country. They've qualified out of group to the round of 16 every tournament they have played in, every World Cup. And 6 of the last 8 times that they have reached the round of 16, they've gone on to the quarters. All right. Answer later on.
If you're watching the stream and I looked confused, it's because I am confused. That's a tough one.
That's always a good starting point.
Because I think there seems to be an obvious answer, but that seems too obvious. It has to be somebody else. But we will save the answer to the end of the show. And we will spend a significant portion of today's podcast live stream at the end previewing tomorrow's really, really, really big game, the USA versus the Netherlands. So everybody hold on to your pants. But first, we need to get into what happened today and the insanity that ensued. We'll start with Group H, Ghana and Uruguay, the South Koreans and Portugal. And Andy's permutation computer was in full, maxed out. We almost had to go get him a whole new CPU to put in there and more memory or something. It was, Lars, did you enjoy all of the action in Group H this morning?
I did. It was intriguing. We had more Match Day 3 in the group stage drama. And it has been a really good Match Day 3 for these in terms of the permutations and excitement. It has been a good tournament in that regard. And I think this is also one of those situations where It pays off to invest your time in listening to people like us and other people, because you really needed to know the background to understand and appreciate some of the drama here. And the fact that this was such a grudge match for Ghana versus Uruguay because of what happened in 2010, and that it meant so much for them, because you had the very strange spectacle of Ghanaians basically celebrating a loss and being eliminated because they managed to take Uruguay with them.
They were stalling. They were wasting time at the end when they were down 0-2 just so Uruguay wouldn't get through.
That is an amazing scene for sure. The Luis Suarez crying on the bench shots was pretty primo stuff if you're not a Luis Suarez fan like myself.
Yeah, so how do we get to that point? Let's, you know, just describe what was going down. Uruguay needed to win, and South Korea needed to either lose or draw against Portugal for Uruguay to get through. Ghana also needed a draw or a win to get through. So Portugal, right off the bat, got their first goal. They were up 1-0, and pretty quickly Uruguay got their first two. By the 32nd minute, Uruguay was up 2-0. Portugal was winning 1-0, so at halftime, it was all looking Uruguay. I mean, South Korea was not only going to have to – well, at that point, South Korea had tied it. It was 1-1 at half. But South Korea was not only going to have to score a goal against Portugal – that's what they were going to have to do. If Uruguay got one more goal, Uruguay would go through. If Portugal held South Korea to no more goals scored, or Portugal went up, Uruguay would go through. So all arrows were pointing in Uruguay's favor going into the half.
All right. What's interesting is, as I started watching this game, because I love the Uruguayans minus Suarez, and I was interested to see how it went, and they went up 2-0. So I flipped over to the other game. But now that I'm coming back to this and looking through the stats, I'm surprised to find out that statistically the game appears to have been played very evenly. Is that how it actually looked by the eyeball test, Lars?
Uruguay had slightly more sort of flow going forward, but because they got the two goals in the first half, they then sort of took their foot off the pedal a little bit, and Ghana were not without their opportunities. Another good game from Mohamed Kudus up front, who's going to make... he's going to make a big club very happy when he moves on from Ajax. I think that this he has been very, very good in this tournament. I think the presence of the Arrasqueta for Uruguay added just a little bit of flair going forward. I say that, I mean, that's obvious. He scored the two goals, but just the fact that they had someone slightly more creative there made them look a bit more dangerous. But it wasn't super one-sided, absolutely not.
Well, were you referring to South Korea-Portugal?
Ghana-Uruguay was 50-50, expected goals essentially the same,
right? And
shots.
Lars, especially after halftime, right? Uruguay then started to coast a little bit. They had to protect the 2-0 lead, and they were counting on Portugal not conceding another one or perhaps going ahead. I think that they counted on that too much. And you made a great observation, Lars, in our little chat. And when you said that the wrong sub was made and perhaps too early for Suarez.
Yeah, no, they took off. I mean, with Suarez, you just don't know how much gas he's got left in the tank at this point of his career. So maybe an hour was all he had in him, and putting on Cavani, okay, fair enough. But they also took off in the 80th minute. They took off Darwin Nunez and the aforementioned Arrasqueta, who scored the two goals. And they were, you know, Maxi Gomez and Canobio are attacking players, so it wasn't as if they put on center halves instead of them. But you still took off your best chance of scoring goals, I think, in those two players. And I don't think they had allowed for the possibility that they might have to score another one. And I guess this is what you could criticize the Uruguayans for here. For, as you mentioned, putting too much faith in Portugal to get the job done against South Korea. When they were 2-0 up, in hindsight, of course, they should have pushed for a third.
Does the fact that the now infamous PK incident at the beginning of the game, where Ghana has a PK saved, how ultimately did that end up affecting things?
That allowed Uruguay to get ahead on enough goal difference by it
the
being
goal
2-0.
Difference. That's what it was. Yeah. I was trying to remember, because if they had scored the goal and it ends up 2-1.
Yeah, they would have been eliminated earlier.
Okay. Right.
And I would say, just in terms of how the games played out, I think it really rattled Ghana mentally. that they had the penalty miss again against Uruguay.
Yeah.
I think for the rest of the first half, they were not fully there. Coach made some big calls at halftime, took off both the Ayew brothers, who, you know, have had a long career with this national team, and they looked sharper in the second half, Ghana. But by then, of course, you're 2-0 down to Uruguay. It's going to be difficult.
Now, Uruguay looked good in the first half. It looked like a good side, and they looked like
that second goal was amazing. Yeah. Nice little sequence.
Now, they knew all along that 3-0 was probably going to be enough, because then Korea would have had to win by two against Portugal, and that was probably enough. So they knew that a third goal was really going to clinch it for them, and they kept trying for that third goal until the aforementioned substitutions that Lars talked about, when they've kind of like settled on the 2-0 lead, thinking that at that point, late in the game, South Korea wasn't going to get it done against Portugal. And I was watching the other game, the South Korea game, on the side. It didn't look to me like South Korea was getting too close going ahead, right? I mean, for the large majority of that second half.
No, and this is the funny thing. When you double screen like I was doing, you do miss things a little bit. You don't follow, you're not able to pick up on everything in the same way as you normally would. But I was baffled to see, as to Peter's earlier point about Uruguay, Ghana, I was very surprised to see that South Korea had as many shots as Portugal in that game, because it did not feel like that watching that game.
They didn't seem to be like those opportunities that are like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, they were manageable.
Yeah.
By the Portuguese defense. Now, another thing we need to mention, concurrently now happening in the Uruguay game, while South Korea is trying to get that second goal that would then have them overtake Uruguay with the 2-0 lead, Uruguay got a penalty shout that had to go to, like, the referee had to go to VAR, to VAR, to check.
Okay, so this is what I want to ask. Considering the penalty, that the incident that gave Ghana the penalty at the beginning of the game, versus the shout that Uruguay had on the Cavani run into the box, to me, both of those, neither one of those in my world are fouls and should be called penalty kicks. But the first one is called a penalty. I don't know how the second one is not, because they appear to me to be equal in severity.
Yeah, I don't know what Lars thinks, but the second one was a bigger shout for a penalty.
I actually thought both of the Uruguay ones were penalties,
to be honest. And then the one that didn't get called a little bit later in the game, after Korea had gone up 2-1.
Yeah, there was one on Cavani.
They had another
right
opportunity that didn't even go to VAR. That was Cavani getting fouled.
That's the one I'm talking about. Which one are you talking about? There's another one that I didn't see.
The one that went to VAR was definitely more of a PK to me than the one that Ghana was given.
Okay.
Then the non-VAR one.
The one with Cavani, as he makes the run into the box, I thought was equal in terms of severity to the PK, the one that Uruguay was charged against them at the beginning of the game.
Agreed.
I didn't see the one that went to VAR with Nunes.
That to me was a slam dunk penalty shout.
Yeah. Wow. And let me just put it out there and say, I think both of the Uruguay penalty shouts are the kind of fouls that if they happen near the center circle, the referee blows a foul, no one bats an eyelid, no one discusses it. Mm-hmm. They're very obvious fouls. But because it's in the penalty area, everyone knows giving a PK is a big deal. The referee chickened out a little bit, I think.
Well, he gave Ghana the same kind of foul, and he gave them the penalty. So,
I wonder if Uruguay's reputation has worked against them a little bit here, and their antics. And I don't know if you guys have seen the video, but like Valverde is basically trolling the referee after the penalty was saved, which I think that's
a great point that Lars makes, because sometimes the referee has so in his mind that this team and Uruguay, they're masters at the dark arts, right? So he already goes into the game thinking these guys are going to try to persuade me, and I'm not going to, you know, and so it kind of works against them sometimes if they get a referee that thinks that way. And I think there was a psychological part of them not getting it. Now, Uruguay is eventually, Korea scores at the death, just about. Uruguay can't get one back. They have like 7 or 8 minutes after the other game's over to try to get that third goal. They don't get it. And Korea ends up advancing. Now, Uruguay has got to feel a little bit. I mean, we have the two non-penalty calls today, right? And then we have, remember the game against Portugal? At the very end, they got a penalty called against them because one of the defenders fell as he was racing.
Yes.
And that that affected goal difference in a way that if they don't get that called against them, they advance. So they have three penalty situations. None of them
went their
four,
way.
Four, one they saved the PK. Actually, four. None went their way.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that.
So I guess in terms of like refereeing injustice and stuff, Uruguay isn't the easiest team in the world to feel sorry for. But in this particular case,
they've won plenty of the other way around, right?
In this particular case, I mean, you can even make the case. I'm reluctant to say this on social media because I think the replies would be angry. But you can make a case that this is a bigger injustice than 2010 was, because 2010 was Suarez committing a foul and taking his punishment and Ghana missing the penalty. That was completely by the book. Whereas here, they've been denied justice, actually, which is weird.
Now, South Korea becomes the third Asian team to qualify for the round of 16 in this World Cup. It's the first time Asia has had three representatives in the round of 16. That is a little bit of, a surprise in this tournament, but it makes sense. It's a tournament being held in the continent of Asia, and there's a continental bias in World Cups. It just comes at the expense of Uruguay. That's all. But the number of teams not from Europe, not from South America, that end up in the round of 16 in this tournament is about the same as any other tournament not played in Europe. So we can talk about the surprises and the changing the guard and all that. At the end of the day, it's like a typical World Cup with lots of surprises and things that are unexpected, and teams that we didn't expect to advance.
Does that mean the Bahamas are going to get through out of their group in 2016?
Aruba's got a great chance.
Aruba, right.
We're going to talk about that whole format.
Since I'm sensing we're not going to spend a lot of time on that game, let me just briefly and finally, before we probably move on, say big ups, as the young people say, big ups to Son Heung-min for his assist for the Korean goal.
He did. He was the one that went out on the breakaway, right? I mean, he took the ball.
He's really struggled in this tournament because people are not even doubling up on him. They're tripling up on him because they know he's the guy, like, for this team.
They tripled up on him. He had the breakaway, they just all...
So he shows tremendous stamina late in the game to lead the breakaway, and then he has the patience to wait for a teammate, and he releases the ball at just the exact split second. I mean, it's really, really well done. It's one of those things more difficult than it might look on first viewing, that assist.
And all the more problematic with it is it's off a Portuguese corner kick.
Yes.
That's how that whole thing starts. Yeah. Portugal has a corner kick. The ball is cleared out. It gets to Sun, and Sun goes on a typical Sun, you know,
we've seen it with
sprint.
Spurs,
right? And as you said, he's got three guys around him when he gets to the top of the box, and he just holds it, and he plays a nutmegs Dallow, United's Dallow, to put the ball through, and it's finished perfectly. Yep. And the scenes were amazing. Yeah, the Korean fans are so awesome.
They had to wait. The players had to wait. The fans all had to wait those 8 minutes because the other game was 8 minutes behind.
That's right.
Yeah. For Uruguay to score or not score a goal. Now, Ronaldo did not score. You know what this means, Peter? You know what this means, Lars? That Eusebio continues to be the king of Portuguese soccer. Still the leading scorer for Portugal in all World Cups with 9 goals.
Now, if he scores in knockout, will that count?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know.
Also, little known fact, Ronaldo has never scored in the knockout rounds of a World Cup.
Really?
Eusebio did. He bagged 4 in a game.
He's the king of Portuguese World Cup soccer. Mm-hmm. Of course he did. No duh.
Yep.
Things you learn on the kick around or Qatar kick around, Lars.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've learned many
Lars
things.
I mean,
I just think if the ball comes to him in front of the goal against Switzerland, the fact that he hasn't done it anywhere else isn't really going to matter that much. But it is
no,
good trivia.
No, but looking back,
It's good trivia.
Okay, so South Korea ends up winning over Portugal 2-1, and Uruguay. Win-lose. They win the game against Ghana, but they lose and they are knocked out. And so that means they will end up facing teams from Group G. What were you going to say, Andy?
Yeah, the matchups.
We'll talk about the matchups. Okay. Let's take our break, and when we come back, we will talk about what happened today in Group G next on the Kick Around.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Here is part two of match day 12 of Qatar Kick Around. Hi, Lars. I had to go get some water. I was telling Andy, I don't know, the system does this weird thing where it unmutes the microphones while we're in break.
Yeah.
And I was, so anybody that kind of heard, I was telling Andy over here at the radio station where we're recording, first off, it's crazy hot in this room. Second of all, one of the production guys is walking around in a very sweet, I don't remember what year it was.
2002
Dallas Byrne third jersey. It was black.
Wow.
Made by Atletico.
That's niche.
Yes. Very cool. It was nice to see. And I was just, you know, you don't see those every day. And I was telling Andy about it.
For the Dallas Byrne in 2002.
Who was?
Yeah. I'm always curious. Well, there's no time for this in this episode. Sorry, I'm starting us on this. No, let's go in a completely different direction.
We'll do that on another episode.
Johnson was already around, huh?
Yes, he was.
I looked it up. Yeah,
yes, he was.
I know who the president GM was.
Yeah, and Andy Swift was the president and GM of that team. Lars, yes, he was. Yes. All right, Group G today played out between Cameroon and Brazil, and the game that I was very worried for about 45 minutes, we had way overhyped as a street fight that was never going to happen, but lo and behold, it did happen. Serbia and Switzerland, fear not, the hate will rise to the top, and it started to poke its ugly head out before the end of it. Which one do you guys want to talk about first?
And Lars, I think the Serbia Switzerland game was a little bit more
exciting, it was tremendous,
right?
I think we ended up on 11 yellow cards. I think that was the final tally.
Was it really? No.
No, I think because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Predicted.
Is there a record for yellow cards in a single game in a World Cup?
Sure, of course.
Do you know what it is?
No, I don't know off the top of my head.
And I would expect Serbia to be involved somehow in that sort of spectacle. I'm really upset that these guys are going home. It is an absolute travesty that we live in a world where Poland are still in this tournament and Serbia aren't. And they're not amazing, but they're very enterprising. Like, they go forward, they don't defend very well. They've given us two of the most entertaining games of the group stage for my money, and this was a fun game. And even I want to give some credit to Switzerland, because I've written them off a little bit. I haven't spoken a lot about them. I find them a little bit boring, but they really did turn up here. And you know, Brela and Bolo up front played really well. Vargas at the left wing, who's one of typically sort of Swiss sort of, yeah, he's fine type of player, but he had a good game. Really lovely assist for one of the goals with a clever back heel. Shout out Shaqiri, Chicago Fire legend. Shout out Shaqiri,
fireman.
Yeah. Did his thing. I mean, at some point in these major tournaments, he always comes up with something for the Swiss. Even if he looks like a completely spent force in a lot of ways, he turned up there with a goal, and he managed to restrain himself from making any problematic hand gestures this time. I'm sure he thought about it.
Boy, did he ever think about it. So he scored that goal. You could just see it running through his head. He wanted to make that flying Albanian eagle or whatever it is he wanted to do with it.
By the way, 16 yellow cards is the record, 11 in this game. So there, but 6 of those 11 yellow cards came after the 80th minute.
Oh, man. Okay. So here's the question. And Lars, because you were expressing some admiration for the Serbs and disappointed that they're out. But I have to ask, Andy, you may know this answer, because this is where I think maybe you should rethink this. Because I don't know if I ever recall a World Cup team taking 2-1 leads twice in the group stage and still playing a super high line and letting teams run through them and giving up those 2-1 leads and having them turn into losses.
Yeah. So, and what I would say too, because, you know, Lars described them as a fun team to watch with
That is fun. That's true. Lars is correct.
I don't disagree. And they have a lot of the individual qualities and play in a lot of ways with the ball like Croatia plays.
Mm-hmm.
The difference being that Croatia knows how to manage the score.
See a game out.
Yes. And it's funny you said that because I was going to reply to Lars's comment with what I just said. And you said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're both thinking the same thing.
And it's just, again, one thing that they were using the lesser spotted big man combo up front. It's usually the big man, little man, but they have two Mitrovic and Vlahovic, two big number nines.
They
up
have
there.
Two nines. They need to trade one nine.
I know.
And get some.
In this crazy tournament where no one has a nine, they've got two of them.
And who could the United States trade with Serbia
to get one of,
to get one of those two nines?
Well, I mean, Mitrovic is expensive. The other one won't be as expensive.
Vlahovic. Yeah, he would. Vlahovic is the guy playing at Juventus.
But Mitrovic is, come on, man.
Yeah. Oh,
but add to that, you're playing two out and out center forward up front, which almost no one does. You have wing backs who are both originally wingers, like proper attacking wingers who have been reschooled to do that. And you have Milinkovic-Savic as one of your two in the midfield, who's basically a playmaker guy who wants to get forward. You have all of this going on in front of a back three that's not very good.
that's playing a high line.
This is a recipe for total nonsense.
You know, it's
chaos,
a recipe for them not advancing yet again. Group stage.
It's
every
true,
year
but
they
gave us a good time. Which
it would have only been better if they played the old sweeper stopper center back formation and just one guy back there by himself. That would be now.
All right. Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Well, hold on. Before we get into that, I just want to talk about the end of the game because, you know, we had talked about this being a war and that not liking each other and the last time they played each other. And in the meantime, since then, Granit Xhaka has undergone some sort of like personality. media deal where suddenly now he's like the sweet, like I think it's from that Amazon Prime deal
on
Arsenal.
PR agent.
Where they were like showing video of him hanging out with his kids and being loving and a doting father. And, you know, he's kind of, and he's been well behaved for Arsenal this year. He hasn't been an instant red card all the time. But boy, howdy, at the very end of that game with it got into it between him and the Serbian center back, and the fight almost broke out at the end. I thought, there's Granit. That's the guy we've been waiting for.
Did he start it? Or he was jawing at the goalkeeper, I thought.
I think something like that. Lars, do you remember how the incident started?
My eyes were briefly at Brazil-Cameroon because, of course, there was stuff going down there towards the end of the game.
Yes.
So I just saw at the bottom of my vision, suddenly it was all kicking off as expected.
So let's talk about that game a little bit because for Cameroon to have a chance to advance, they were going to have to beat Brazil and hope for certain results in the Switzerland-Serbia game. And, of course, we all thought, no, there's no way Cameroon's going to beat Brazil. But lo and behold, it was 0-0 all the way till very late in the game. And so at one point, Cameroon had a real chance of winning the game and perhaps overtaking Brazil in goal difference had they gotten a second for first place.
Yeah. Well, but didn't the Swiss also miss first place by just one goal?
It was the Swiss. It was the Swiss, right.
If Switzerland had scored one more goal,
right, because
they would
because
have won
Cameroon,
the group.
Yeah, exactly, because Cameroon scored on Brazil. So there's a little bit of chaos in a group. We didn't expect a lot of end-game chaos.
All right, but here's the question I want to ask you about Brazil, because a comment was made to me as I walked into the building today by one of the guys at the station who is a soccer fan but not a hardcore fan. He was because I popped that on. He goes, was that Brazil's B or even C team?
Mm.
And I thought to myself, well... And then I go and I look at the lineup and I'm thinking...
That's B-ish.
Yeah. Fabinho,
I mean,
Fred,
did you tell
Martinelli,
him that their captain was 48 years old or something?
I know, but look at the... This drives at a larger point about Brazil's depth. Like, the United States is worried about who they're going to put on the field tomorrow. Today, Brazil throws out... any of these guys would start for most countries.
Yes.
It's an unbelievable lineup.
Okay, but.
But. Here's the but.
Yeah.
It's like the French thing.
Exactly. When I was making fun of the French saying, your B team would still win a World Cup. Not so much.
They lose
and
to
then,
us.
What did I
Tunisia.
Say? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe Brazil is the only one that can roll out the B team and still win the World Cup. Not so much.
Why is that, Lars? Because you would look at this lineup and go, good Lord, there's some world-class players on this team.
Yeah, I did think they lacked a Neymar replacement, though. They don't have that kind of play, that sort of number 10 to string the passes together. You know, they left Firmino at home. Coutinho's obviously lost it entirely, but that sort of type of player is something they really lacked, because they had that row of Martinelli, Rodrigo, and Anthony. And it felt like every time I looked up from the very engrossing Serbia-Switzerland game, every time I looked up to Brazil, one of these nippy wide forwards were running past Cameroonians and causing chaos, but they were eventually tackled.
Yeah.
I think a very large number of dribbles were completed in this game. I haven't checked the stats, but that seemed to happen quite a lot.
This is why I said when Neymar went down, and we still don't know how long he's going to be out for. I doubt he comes back for the round of 16 like they're saying. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What I was saying is I don't know if Brazil can lift the trophy without Neymar.
Because they have these exciting nippy wide forwards who can go past people, but they really lack someone with the killer pass in them now, I think, with that attack. And let's be clear here. They created more than enough chances to score several goals against Cameroon. I haven't checked the XG, but I'm guessing it was pretty
2.25
clear. 2.25
to 0.46.
And they had 21 shots to Cameroon 7 in this game. But it was it looked a little bit chaotic to me. It looked a little bit, And interestingly, the entire front line, I mean, Gabriel Jesus, Rodrigo, Anthony were all subbed, whereas Martinelli stayed on, interestingly enough. And Martinelli, I thought, actually looked the sharpest of the ones. His trajectory has been pretty extraordinary. He may have done something to put himself in the frame for some game time going forward. So I thought he was
Bruno Guimarães got in the game, I see.
Yeah.
Newcastle zone.
And they did more than enough to win the game, but no one put the ball in the net. And I wonder if, the Neymar thing, it might as good as their B team is, he is a loss for them.
Yes. So again, the last country to win a World Cup without their talisman, 1962, Pele got injured first game, Brazil still won it.
Okay, so now that we know how all of this has played out, and we know the path. Right. We know how Brazil gets to the final. We know now that they will, assuming they continue to win, we know that, you know, a Brazil Argentina semifinal is possible now. Right. Like it's OK. So that's the question, is knowing what you know about Brazil and what you've seen out of them in the last two games, a Neymar-less Brazil. Are we now in a position that we start reconsidering who we think are favorites from Argentina, who hasn't played very well, Brazil that's missing Neymar?
I think Lars started calling it a few days ago that we all go back now to France, because they just have Mbappe. They have the difference maker. As long as their defense can hold steady and they can keep the ball out of the net, they have enough to get that goal.
And they don't field five center midfielders.
Right.
I think that game was a write-off. That shouldn't enter your thinking.
Yeah, well, Brazil's game today was a write-off too, in a way, for the same reason, except we saw a weakness. We saw a true weakness with them.
All right, so that's what I wanted to turn to both of you guys in terms of history, which is how do teams that play, because Japan beat Spain, Korea beat Portugal, Tunisia beat France, all three of those teams kind of weren't in, well, Spain was in a need to get a result kind of situation. But the question is, how often do good teams play poorly or not get good results in their third game because they don't really have much at stake, and then just, you know, use that as a recharging?
It happens often.
All the time.
It happens often.
So it's not, this isn't an indicator that these teams are going to suck or lose or get blown out in the round of 16.
It's not, but I think you look for certain things. Like today, you look to see how Brazil can combine up front without Neymar. You look for France, what they can do without Mbappe. Not much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But France has Mbappe going forward, Brazil doesn't.
Yeah. I think, should we actually, before we pivot to the US, should we just run through the bracket really fast and see what we think? Since we're heading into the round of 16 now.
I think that makes total sense.
Do you want to go first, Andy?
Yeah, the bracket as a whole?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so to me, the most of these eight games are, I don't call them toss-ups, but it's not like you have a huge favorite heading into the game, except for maybe France-Poland. I think collectively we don't like Poland, but it doesn't mean they can't get the result. Now, remember this, round of 16, you can still see surprises. There'll be a lot of tight games. A lot of these games might go into added extra time, perhaps a few PKs. It's really in the quarters and then forward where the depth really starts to come into play. So round of 16, we can still see some stuff. We'll save U.S., Netherlands for later. Argentina, Australia. You would think Argentina has the upper hand there. We'll probably preview them today a little bit later as well, so maybe we skip that one. Japan, Croatia, to me, that's a very even game from what we've seen from Japan. Croatia, tired legs. They're getting older. Brazil, South Korea, the reasons we just spoke about. South Korea could surprise, although I think Brazil prevails in this one just because it's Brazil. England, Senegal.
Lars, you want to pick up?
England, Senegal, listen, I don't trust them at all, but if I had to pick one as a betting thing or whatever, I mean, you can't really go against England, but it's not, like you say, it's not a slam dunk at all. I think Senegal have got the tools to make this really awkward for them. Then we've got France-Poland, which is, we are not giving Poland a chance here, really, unless Didier Deschamps does something absurd and changes the formation to play someone in a weird place. I don't think that'll happen. I can't see that going. And then there's the Morocco-Spain one, which I think is really, really interesting. Because
Hold on, let's go in order.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to go down all of them and then have y'all go down all of them. I was doing it wrong. So we can just go back up to Japan-Croatia, let Lars and you talk about that
okay.
one.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I completely agree with you. I don't think we have time to do all of them twice, as I was going to just crack on.
Yeah. I didn't mean to run over you. I just thought I'd do all of them, you do all of them, and everybody.
One of my questions, though, structurally for the tournament, is why are Group A teams playing a day later than, like, Argentina, which is a Group C team, which has to play on Saturday, and England plays on Sunday? A Group B team is playing on...
No, the groups cross. So two teams from A play one day, two teams...
I would just assume the Group A and B matchups would be played on Saturday, and the Group C and D games would be played on Sunday.
Yeah, but then it affects the quarter, so then all Group A's have an advantage over, Group C.
But Peter, you derailed it now. We've looked at the last 16 games. We've got Morocco, Spain, and Portugal, Switzerland next, and they're kind of also interesting because they have an obvious favorite, but none of them, I think, are slam dunks.
Yeah, Portugal, Switzerland, nice tight game, right? I mean...
Well, Portugal will be very strong favorites in the betting, I would imagine. But Switzerland are a well-rounded and functional team who, if Portugal have one of those days where they don't score goals and Cristiano Ronaldo is kind of hanging around not doing much, can beat them. I think that's possible.
But looking at the bracket as we see it now, with all of the teams in place, do we feel like somebody has the cleanest path to the final or winning it? Or are the big teams England, France, Spain, Brazil, Argentina?
You look at it in quadrants, right? The quadrants that lead to the semis. And on paper, Brazil's quadrant seems to be the weakest on paper, but it doesn't mean South Korea can't give Brazil a game and Croatia, Japan then can give the winner that a game.
Yeah,
but on paper, that's the weakest quadrant to me.
Both Brazil and Argentina, I think, are very pleased with their potential quarterfinal opponents compared to what they got on the other side of the draw.
Do you think one of those two teams would give up the quarter quadrant to have avoided each other in the semifinal and moved to the and had a final?
No, because once you start speculating on semis, you're doing it wrong. Okay. So I mean, the bottom has France and Spain. No. Yeah.
Once you get to the semis, you're going to play one of the best teams in the world no matter what happens, or someone who's dumped out one of the best teams in the world. So there's no easy semifinal in the World Cup. It is possible to have a kinder route to get to there.
Pick for a surprise, Peter. One pick for a surprise.
Yeah.
And then Lars, one pick for a surprise.
Pick for out of the round of 16?
Yeah.
The U.S.
Okay, Lars?
Damn it. That was going to be mine.
You could pick them too.
Let's go. Well, yeah, the U.S. is mine, but let's just add something to the mix. Let's go with my boys, Morocco. I think Spain are vulnerable. I think Morocco look well drilled. I think they can keep them out, and they've got individuals down the other end that can do something.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick as well, and the U.S. was going to be my pick as well. I think we have consensus. Let's just say those are our two surprise picks. How's that?
Excellent. Okay. We'll talk more about that in the coming days. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get into previewing the biggest game of our lives, the U.S. versus Netherlands, and we'll discuss it next on The Kick Around.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
So here is part three of Qatar Kick Around. Lars, you've magically reappeared after your whole virtual background thing is.
I had to look after
hypnotic.
My dog for a minute, Peter. I had to move
okay?
her. Well, she suddenly made a noise of discomfort under the desk here. I think she'd
not
bumped,
enough attention.
Bumped her head or on something.
Poor thing.
She is a very big dog trying to fit under the desk as
you
I record
show
these
the,
things.
You should show the people watching the live stream, Lola, who have not seen her before. Can you do that?
I'm not sure how I would do that. No, because if I move the camera, I think it's going to get weird.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Talking about derailing the whole thing at
Sorry.
That point.
Well, you know, I'm nervous. I don't want to talk about this. I'm very, very butterflies in the tummy kind of thing. But before we get to that, it is time now for Professor Andy's World Cup Trivia. I don't know. Brought to you by soccer90.com.
There you go.
Buy a shirt there.
Okay. The question was, which country playing in this World Cup has reached the round of 16 in every tournament they have qualified for? In other words, in every World Cup they have played in, they have reached the round of 16. They've always advanced out of the group stage. And in fact, they've reached the quarterfinals 6 of the last 8 times they've played in the round of 16.
See, I feel like this is a trap question because I think the obvious answer is Brazil.
Yeah.
But that just seems so obvious that it has to be somebody else. Or is it Brazil?
No, Brazil has not reached the round of 16 in every tournament they have played in.
Hmm. Okay.
In fact, they,
I told you, Lars, it was a trick question. Professor Andy throws in the tricky. Lars, would you like to make a guess since I blew it?
No, I would not like to make a guess because I couldn't.
So the answer... and they've played in 10 World Cups. They've qualified for 10 World Cups, and they've made the round of 16 every time, and they've qualified for
six
of the last...
Is it Argentina then, I guess?
No, it is the Netherlands.
Ah, it is the Dutch.
The team.
Crazy
the
Dutch.
US
the greatest team to have never won the World Cup.
Soccer royalty. That's who the U.S. is facing tomorrow.
All right, Lars.
Except...
yes, because here's the thing. We said it on this podcast after the U.S. beat Iran, and I've heard it repeated by other people and read it repeated by other people, that there is a sense that the Dutch are there to be had.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Having watched their 3 games in the group stage, I'm not impressed with them at all.
Harsh.
But they've not played well in any of the games. I mean, they played reasonably well against Qatar, but I'm not sure that really counts. And it's they're trying to play quite a patient sort of possession game, but it's a little bit slow and ponderous and not that effective. And they've got Memphis Depay, who's not fully fit for them up front, which is a problem because he's been really almost carrying the team in an attacking sense after Louis van Gaal came back. His goal scoring burden has kind of been taken on by Cody Gakpo, who's having a great tournament. He is very dangerous, but this has not looked like an impressive team. Like, again, this is a team that produced 2 shots over 90 minutes against Ecuador, right? That's not impressive. Like, that's terrible.
And then there was reports today that there has been an outbreak of the flu amongst the Dutch. And I don't know, Lars, if you've heard anything more specific over there. I also then subsequently read that everybody showed up to training today for them. But I don't know if you have any more information about that.
I haven't seen any confirmation one way or the other on that. But
I think Van Gaal brought it up in his press conference earlier today.
And then you don't know, like, how they've been sick, but how badly sick they've been. And how it's almost like...
Head games?
Did you guys see what Van Gaal said about Greg Berhalter today?
No.
I need to find this tweet. Give me a second.
So, how will the Netherlands approach this game against the U.S. in terms of tactics, seeing as how the U.S. has been playing, especially playing so well in midfield?
Yeah, so they have so far in the tournament played in a sort of 3-5-2 type of system with the three center halves, and interestingly, Matthias de Ligt has fallen out of favor a little bit, even though he's a very big name, you know, plays for Bayern Munich and all that. But they have Virgil van Dijk in the middle, Nathan Ake on the left, and Jurrien Timber on the right, and that is a strong unit. Not just because van Dijk is obviously a great player, but also because you have in Timber and Ake, you have players on each side who can also play fullback and has played fullback on that side. So that sort of less wide center half position, if you will, in the back three is very well suited to them. So the back line is pretty strong. We'll see what happens in midfield, because he's mixed it up a little bit from that sort of slightly goofy sort of Frankie de Jong, Steven Berghuis, and Cody Gakpo as a 10, I think was the idea in the first game against Senegal. He went with just no ball winners of any kind in midfield, and it didn't work. And he's changed midfield every game so far. Not in a sort of this is what we planned for way, but in a sort of I don't really know how my midfield is supposed to work kind of way. So that's also like a bad sign. And also for a team that plays 3-5-2, their wingbacks aren't amazing. Like Denzel Dumfries is athletic and gets up and down, but he's a little bit sloppy in some ways. I'm not very impressed by this Dutch side. And I think if the US go out and you play it like you played against England, which is bring all that energy and running power you have in midfield to bear and try to frustrate them and stop them from moving the ball around, I think you can do something against these guys.
Is the key to this game, Peter, for the US, because he talks about their struggles wide with their win-backs, is the key width for the U.S. this game, Dest and Robinson bombing down the sides?
Well, this is what I've been fascinated by, is what Berhalter does for a starting 11. I mean, we were talking a couple of podcasts ago about the amount of minutes that are on the Americans. And I don't know, because I haven't paid close enough attention, Lawrence, you may have a sense of how many minutes are on Frankie de Jong, for example, and the rest of the Dutch. I mean, are they on high minutes too? He was mentioned specifically as somebody who apparently has the flu and they won't report how bad it is.
Yeah, he's played all but 4 minutes of the tournament so far. He's on 266.
Well, whereas, Tyler Adams is on all the minutes, right? So, and I'm sure he's capable of doing it, but there are a lot of players in the United States. And so is this where we start to see an Aaronson? And I guess the question for the United States is, if you put in a Giovanni Reyna and a Brendan Aaronson for a Christian Pulisic and maybe a Yunus Musah, right? Is that a downgrade? And I think the answer is no, just because the Dutch are a different team and aren't going to play deep and aren't going to, you know, park the bus. They're going to leave space. And I think that does provide opportunities for Berhalter to make some rotation and not really lose much out of the 11.
Right. And as a healthy Reyna starting for a not 100% Pulisic down, I mean, is that a better decision?
I would tend to think Pulisic is likely to come in as a sub. Mm-hmm. Unless the whole injury thing was just not that bad at all, and then you start him.
Yeah.
It's Musah and McKennie that I'm most worried about in terms of
Aaronson.
Mileage.
That's Aaronson.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's not.
And then, you know, I think Dest has been really good. I'm not worried about the back line. It'll be interesting to see if he goes back to Zimmerman instead of. But I thought Cameron Carter-Vickers was fine.
Yeah.
It is.
The star of the back line has been Ream.
Sure.
Defensively.
Yeah. So I don't know. Look, I feel good. I'm not worried about this game. I'm not worried about the U.S. getting shellacked.
No, you're not worried in the sense that, hey, it could be a close game that the Netherlands wins. It could go to extra time, and that's okay. And,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not going to be like they're going to be the Netherlands and, you know, walk all over the U.S. and win 3-0. No. I mean, we hope not. We don't think so.
No, if you play the kind of game you played against England, I don't see you getting blown away here at all. I think you have the energy and the capacity to match them in midfield and make it awkward for them. The thing that's a concern is that they have something that you guys don't really have, which is a forward on great form who's very confident, who's been finding the net in this tournament. And that's the thing that would worry me. Cody Gakpo is a striker who, you know, if he has the ball anywhere from 30 yards in, it's dangerous. He's got a good shot on him and he can get past people. So they have a bit of an ace up front. But then again, England have a few of those and they couldn't do anything against you guys.
Yeah, they played really well against Harry Kane. And limiting chances and playing good defense has been this team's best feature. Running through qualification, Lars, it's their problem has been scoring and creating goals, and that may turn out to be the big problem. I mean, I don't know. Maybe things flip. Maybe they score goals tomorrow, but now they can't prevent goals, and that's what ends up dooming them. But that would be very unusual.
So, in terms of minutes, the players who have played every minute, or the outfielders who have played every minute for Holland, are both the wing backs, Daley Blind and Denzel Dumfries. And Daley Blind is 32. He's played all minutes so far at left wing back, as well as Nathan Ake and Virgil van Dijk in defense. And then Frankie de Jong has played every minute but four. And Cody Gakpo has also been on the field for most of the time. So there might be some legginess there, but can I turn that around? I mean, I almost take it for granted that you guys will bring the physicality and the energy. But as one of our stream commenters observed, you did look a bit tired in the second half against Iran. Is there a worry that some of your guys might be feeling it?
Absolutely. And that's the whole point to the question. I mean, I'm just going to work with the fact that I love Tyler Adams so much that he could play 90, 100 minutes every game for the entire tournament and still go for a marathon run afterwards if he wanted to. But McKennie has the thigh injury, a groin injury, that it clearly has hampered him a little bit. And Yunus Musah is also on an insane amount of minutes. And if there was anybody at the end of the Iran game that looked absolutely spent, it was that poor guy. So it wouldn't surprise me to see one of those two guys come out, as Andy said, for Brendan Aaronson. The other question is what happens up top. We've talked about this before. There's been a lot of yammer here in Dallas specifically about the lack of time for Jesus Ferreira. This to me feels like a game set up for him because there's going to be space. There's going to be a need for a guy to check back a little bit and can leak the balls out wide to whoever's playing on either side of him.
Yeah, and specifically, since he's someone who's used to playing as a bit of a false nine and dropping into midfield a little bit, this game is all about stopping the Dutch from getting their passing game going. That's the crucial thing here. And in Frankie de Jong, they have a guy who likes to come deep and sometimes even just pick up the ball off the center halves and try to sort of dribble or move it forward. He's a very strange character, Frankie de Jong. He doesn't remind me of any other player currently active because he's kind of he's a type of playmaker. I don't think there's a real term for it. So who likes to be active just all over the field and sometimes drop surprisingly deep to get involved with the build up from there. I guess he's the player that Eriksen wishes he could be right now if they had the legs for it. Whereas Frankie de Jong is quite a lot younger and hasn't died recently, so he's, for him, that's a little bit easier. But yeah, the idea of like Jesus Ferreira as a false nine to maybe specifically track De Jong in those moments when he comes deep and wants to build from there. That could be an idea.
It's interesting because I just had a train of thought that I just popped out of my head. Crumbs. Andy, vamp for me, please, while I recover my thought, please.
So in terms of score expectancy tomorrow, I think it's these round of 16 games often are tight affairs. I think 1-1 extra time.
Yeah, something like that. I think extra time is
I wouldn't
a very
be surprised
shot.
Either team winning an extra time, perhaps PKs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had to predict.
And I would also just remind everybody, Mr. Matt Turner's expertise is penalty kick saving. That is like something he became very famous for. At his time in New England, was saving PKs. His save rate was pretty significant. So just keep that in mind because we are at that point where we may have to end up facing that. And I've completely lost the idea, the point that I wanted to make, and it's escaped. People watching the stream probably saw it leave out my ear and evaporate into the air because now I can't remember what I wanted to talk about. So. Sorry, Lars.
And can I just throw out, as I always do, the betting side of it, which is I've looked at the odds now, the bookmakers are offering, we're again in this scenario where there's about a 50% chance of the Dutch winning and a 50% chance of a draw or US. That's after 90 minutes. And I think with those being the odds, I think backing you guys to not lose in 90 is actually quite an interesting bet. I think that's something I would stick in my column, actually.
So looking back at the U.S. in round of 16 matches dating back to 94 when they played in their first one, that was a 1-0 loss to Brazil. Very tight affair in a game they were supposed to have gotten blown out in, you know, as predicted prior to that game, because the U.S. went to the round of 16 as a wild card team. In 2002, they won their round of 16 match. They beat Mexico 2-0. In 2010, they lost in added extra time to Ghana. And in 2014, they lost in added extra time to Belgium. So they've always played these games really tight. Well, they, with the exception of the one they won, I certainly expect that this game could very well go to added extra time.
So, Louis van Gaal this morning in his press conference was asked about Greg Berhalter, and he said, quote, "What I observe is a vision. What I see is a team that is keen to execute that vision, which is of the utmost importance. I see that conviction, especially the conviction of players." So that for a coach must be fantastic. And the reason why I bring this up is one of the interesting things that has been happening over the course of the last week, as other countries and people who don't watch the United States play, I have consistently seen praise heaped on the United States and Berhalter for their style of play, their organization, and the fact that there clearly looks to be a plan in place, which is really interesting because of the criticism that Berhalter comes under here back in the United States for a whole host of reasons that have nothing to do with him being a good or bad coach. And so it will be interesting to see how the game plays out tomorrow. Is it like the Belgium game where they end up just squandering an opportunity and they end up losing it? Or is it a blowout one way or the other? That is something we're going to talk about a lot, is the Berhalter effect the tournament.
But what I would throw in is that with the Belgium game, you also needed your goalkeeper to make a record number of saves, right? And I don't think that'll be necessary tomorrow. I don't think the Dutch will create that many problems for you, honestly.
Let's not forget that the two times the U.S. had the lead, the second halves were terrible. So while they have played a good tournament collectively for the six halves so far, there are two distinct halves where they weren't very good.
John Mueller of The Athletic wrote a fantastic article. Have you guys read that yet? I think I sent it to you guys. Have you read it, Andy? John Mueller of The Athletic, he wrote a really well thought out. He has video and screenshots explaining why the United States is so good for 45 minutes and then kind of lose their head in the second 45 minutes. And if you haven't read it yet, and if you don't have a subscription, go find somebody that has it so they can help you read it. It really is maybe one of the best things I've read about this team in some time. So it's quite good. Lars, did we make predictions? Well, I was trying to recapture my thought.
Well, I started to make. I don't know what, and it kind of depends on the health and who the Netherlands rolls out tomorrow and the flu and if that's all true. But
update: Pulisic and Josh Sargent both were in training today for the United States. By the way, one of the things we didn't talk about, I thought Josh Sargent was outstanding for the United States against Iran. He held the ball up. He played back. I thought he was quite good, at least in terms relative for the United States.
So if he's not healthy and Wright might not be the right one for this one, and then it might be Ferreira. Maybe, or it might Ferreira be Weah time. In the middle.
Or they do that thing where they move one of the wingers into the middle. Yeah.
So I'll say draw.
Okay.
Yeah. That means one of the teams wins through PKs, advances through PKs, because PKs are technically not a win or a loss.
Okay.
And you don't want to predict who wins.
Who advances on PKs? Let's say the U.S. because of Turner.
I think that's a really good prediction. That's annoying because I wanted to. Does it fall to me to be the Grinch here, though? Because basically Andy is just taking my prediction. I don't think we should have the
you
same
can
prediction.
Agree. Well, it's three of us.
Whatever you want. Yeah. I haven't made mine yet, so go ahead.
I think this going to penalties and the U.S. prevailing is a good prediction. I like it.
All right. I'm going to say the U.S. wins it in added time on an added time goal. And I think this
McKinney crashing the box. That's what you predicted against England, I think.
No, I don't think poor Weston will make it that long.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Great point.
And I'm even going to be so bold as to predict a score. 3-2.
Wow.
Write it down. Mark it down, Americans. All right. The other game tomorrow is the afternoon game, Argentina and Australia.
And this is who the winner of the U.S. game would play, by the way. So
you beat the Dutch. You probably are going to end up facing Lionel Messi trying to complete his storybook ending. So, Laura, any comments or preview of this that we need to share with everybody?
Well, I think Argentina will win, but I suspect Australia can make it difficult for them. So what I said in my column for the Racing Post here in England about this is that I think Australia, to keep it tight and there to be a draw at halftime, is an interesting prospect here. I really think Australia, with all their much, it always sounds so patronizing, but we mean it in a positive way, with the grit and determination and the fight that I know you guys are used to this, right? It feels like a pat on the head, but these are important qualities, and they've already seen Australia get results that on talent, maybe the squad doesn't merit. I think they'll show that again. I think they can frustrate an underwhelming Argentina team. So maybe still 0-0 at halftime, but sooner or later, the talent, I think, will turn it in Argentina's favor.
Yeah, I think it's 1-0 with a late goal, maybe a messy free kick.
Yeah,
Di Maria from outside the area, something like that.
Yeah.
And since I have anointed them as having a vibe of a late 90s, early aughts United States
really
team,
do.
I feel like this is U.S. Germany 2002. Oh. And so it'll be like an Otamendi handball that doesn't get called or something on a shot from Moy that we just rant and rave and feel bad about forever and ever. So, yeah, probably Argentina goes through.
So wouldn't
there.
It be great if Mitchell Duke from the Japanese second tier knocks out Lionel Messi? I mean, as much as I want the storybook ending for Messi, that would be a World Cup upset for the ages.
That would be so
sad.
That
would be something.
Hey, the other thing that I forgot to mention, and I should have brought it up when we were talking about Group G, was the absolutely wonderful scenes of Abubakar scoring that goal.
Oh, I can't believe we haven't mentioned it.
And then immediately getting his second yellow for taking his shirt off and having to be ejected from the game for that.
The worst part is that the chaos was still in play.
Yes.
And yellow cards, there was a chance if they scored again, yellow cards would have come into play. The point system, right?
See, I remember that the whole yellow card for taking your shirt off was tied to a World Cup when Nike and Adidas had designed shirts within the shirt.
To get them back on again.
Right, because it was a very humid place.
Yes. I thought it was because of what you could have underneath your shirt,
Also like you can throw it to the crowd and then it takes ages to find a new shirt.
That's indoor soccer, Lars. That's tattoo. You've got your sports confused. No, maybe you're right, Andy. Maybe it was to try to prevent messages. I thought it had to do with the amount of time it was taking players to get another shirt put back on.
That was in a World Cup or just in general?
Oh,
It started in club soccer.
I don't remember. There was a year Nike was trying to invent dry fit stuff, and they had sewn a tighter undershirt inside the original shirt. And when you tried to take it off, it was like a bondage scene or something trying to put it back on. It was ridiculous. And that was the impetus for them.
2004 is when it started, in a bid to clamp down on time wasting. So that would be closer to your theory than mine.
Yeah. So, I don't remember. Maybe it wasn't a World Cup. Maybe it was some other tournament. I don't know. You guys don't worry about sweating up in Norway very much. So maybe you didn't have that problem. Lars.
No. But I do remember on the subject of sweat, before World Cup 94, they were very worried about the heat. And as a sort of measure to help, they trained with like trash bags over their heads and stuff. Like they had big sort of bin bags around them to train in so that they would get used to sweating. Not sure the science behind that was very sound.
They could have just gone to train in a hot weather.
Yeah, I'm not
climate.
Entirely sure. I know this is half a thing. I should fully research that story, but I do remember press clippings of them like training with trash bags on.
It was hot. The games at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas were all triple digit festivals for sure. Yeah. They were very, very hot. All right, Lars, again, we do love chatting with you on a daily basis, our friend.
I'm really enjoying it. It's just dawning on me now. I should have known this a long time, but there's no break between this and the
first time.
The
there's
knockout.
No break.
Absolute
yes, this
madness.
World Cup is 3 days shorter than a normal World Cup in length of days. all because of the issues
there are no games Wednesday and Thursday of next week, I believe that's correct. And what I got to figure out is what our agreement is with Westwood One on how many shows we're supposed to do, because I can't remember if we're not doing a show Wednesday and we are doing a preview show Thursday, but we'll fill everybody in on that later.
We could do a non-match day one where we just discuss formats and stuff. I mean, and other nonsense. That could be good.
Or a Q&A episode where we let the people ask us questions.
I would
enjoy
that. Okay. But I also have plans of going out like one day during. We'll have to talk about this up here.
All right. No worries. Lars, thank you, man. Have a good evening. Get some sleep, my friend.
Thank you. I have one social appointment for this entire World Cup period. I think it's on the 15th. I'm going to double check it.
You're so popular. Andy, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Have a good Friday evening with the lady friend. And thank you guys for watching the live stream, listening to the pod. We'll talk to you tomorrow for, I guess it's match day 13, but it is the big U.S.-Netherlands game. We'll talk to you then. Get stuck in. Win your 50s.
The Kick Around is a production of Westwood One Sports and PCW Projects.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.